The Chicago Cubs are in town. Surely they brought some fans with them as the Brewers and Chicago Cubs get set for a four-game series at Miller Park beginning Thursday night. I'm J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. And to commemorate the occasion, here in the middle of the first homestand of 2018, thought we'd throw in another special edition of the podcast. I sat down with Todd Rosiak and Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporters, to chat about the state of the team. Christian Yelich leaving Wednesday night's game with an oblique injury is certainly something to watch. The starting pitching has not been great. The bullpen has been fantastic. So we talked about both of those topics. Got into the subject of great walk-off moments in Brewers history. After Ryan Braun and Christian Yelich went back-to-back, Braun's home run winning the game on Tuesday night in an absolute thriller. First game in MLB history where game started with back-to-back homers when the Cardinals started against Chase Anderson in sort of ominous way. And then the Brewers ended the game winning 5-4 after Yelich and Braun went back-to-back. We talked about some great walk-off moments. You can find a compilation I made on jsonline.com. 13 great moments, walk-off moments in the past 10 years. Check that out from a couple days ago at jsonline.com. I also sat down with Josh Hader, reliever of the Milwaukee Brewers. Probably one of the more entertaining guys on the team. Definitely somebody that I enjoy watching pitch. He's in his second season with the team after a pretty impressive rookie debut last year. He's capable of going two innings, capable of crushing left-handers. Whatever you need him to do, he'll do it. And a couple podcasts ago, you'll recall that my pick for an All-Star this year was Josh Hader as maybe going out on a little bit of a limb. I think that could be what we see this year. So I wanted to catch up with him and chat with him a little bit about his upbringing in baseball growing up in Maryland and his bouncing around a little bit when he was traded from the Orioles to the Astros and then from the Astros to the Brewers and a little bit just about what he brings to the table. So chatted with him, but first caught up with Tom and Todd to talk about the state of the Brewers. Joined now by Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat writer, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Todd Rosiak might be joining us in a minute as well. Tom, the big news that came out of the game on Wednesday night was an injury to Christian Yelich. As we record this on Wednesday, we don't know a lot about that. Sounds like he's going to be day-to-day, but we talked a little bit about oblique injuries in general, and Zach Davies had one in spring that turned out to actually be minor, the first of its kind, a minor oblique injury, but there are just very few injuries like that that don't end up costing a player a fair amount of time, right?
Yeah, we'll see. Yelich didn't seem to think it was bad, but let's see what the doctors say and if he does miss time. Oblique injuries are tricky for ball players because they torque their torso so much. The hitters torque them swinging, the pitchers torque them throwing. Like you said, Zach Davies had the incredibly rare, should be chronicled in a medical guide, minor oblique injury. Only missed one turn in camp. And didn't miss any time to start the season. So, the one thing about this is certainly they don't want to lose Yelich for any amount of time. But we've been wondering, what are they going to do with all these outfielders? And they always say, well, stuff comes up. Well, it looks like something's already come
for
up.
For sure.
With Lester pitching for the Cubs as we speak in this podcast in the game Thursday night, a lefty. It's a good day to rest Yelich anyway. He had played every inning until they took him out in the seventh inning on Wednesday night. So we'll see. This still gives you a pretty daggone good outfield of Braun in left, Kane in center, and Santana in right, and lets Thames play first base. So, they've been in a rotation, JR, where Yelich and Kane were playing every day. We knew that. You don't spend $80 million on Kane and give away three of your best prospects for Yelich and not play him every day. So that put the Brewers in basically a 3-for-2. Braun, Santana, and Thames. 3-for-2. One of those guys had to sit every day because if Braun played in the outfield, Santana sat, and if Braun moved to first base, Thames sat, or Braun's, they've sat him out two games and the other two guys played.
Right.
So we've been in a 3-for-2, and that's not a horrible situation. I'm going to do some shameless advance notice here and tell you that I'm writing my Sunday column about why this is not a problem. Why having an extra outfielder is not a problem. And I point out that if Craig Counsell went to his general manager and said, would you stop giving me so many good players, he'd be the first manager in Major League history to utter that sentence.
Right.
And he ain't going to say it.
No, and it's nice to see Eric Thames swinging a hot bat, too. He's looked really good at the plate, very comfortable, so it's nice that he'll be able to get into the lineup even if it means it comes at the expense of another player. So we talked about Davies a little bit. It's no secret starting pitching was a storyline coming into the season. It's still a storyline. It hasn't been great. Ulysses Chacin struggled in back-to-back outings. Suter and Davies, Chase Anderson in one of his two starts struggled. I mean, this is a really small sample, and no one's going to be able to draw any conclusions yet. But at what point would you be worried about it, especially when you're talking about a slight velocity drop with Chase Anderson? At what point would you start to be concerned about the starting rotation?
I'd have to see several turns through before I thought it was an issue. You know, as we do this podcast, Jared, they've played six games.
Right.
You know, only two guys have pitched more than once, Anderson and Chacin. So.
Right.
Let's wait and see. I don't know what six games out of 162, what their percentage is, what, 1 or 2%.
Yeah, it's probably not even an NFL regular season week yet. We're
right,
probably not there yet.
Right. So, and if you go back and look, Davies had a rough April last year, still went 17-9 with an ERA
right.
below 4. And Chacin is a traditionally slow starter. We don't know that from watching him because he's a new player, but you know it from looking at his stats over the years. So let's see what happens. It would be folly to make any snap judgment on anything after six games. Now, have they scuffled out of the gate? Yeah, but you know, Anderson pitched really good his first time out. Suter pitched okay his first time out. You know, Woodruff hasn't even taken a turn yet. Won't until Friday night. So let's see what he does. So you know, let's see what happens. I hesitate to even judge anything until we play at least 20, but probably 40 games. Let's play
sure.
25% of the season before we see what's what. If all of a sudden, if you make four bad starts and then your next four starts are good, everybody forgets the four bad ones.
Right. The flip side to the starting rotation is how good the bullpen has been. They have a 1.32 ERA through those six games. And again, we can't make judgments about that.
Right.
But what we've seen is how they'll be managed. And that's to use these guys for more than one inning per appearance. And that's not a secret necessarily, but we've now seen it in practice. We saw somebody go at least two innings in each of the first four games of the season, and that mitigates the starting pitching struggles. Now, the cliche you hear, true or not, is that over the course of a season, if starters can't work deep into games, the bullpen will get tired out. I don't know if that's actually in practice what happens. It certainly makes logical sense. You've seen enough seasons of baseball to know what that looks like, especially in Milwaukee. We've had seasons like that where starters have struggled. Do you think the bullpen is likely to get burned out if the starters can't work deeper into games, or is that maybe overstated a little bit?
Well, some guys get tired. I think Carlos Torres was, as they used to say in the Old West, was rode hard and hung up wet.
Yeah.
And he sort, you know, I think that's why he's no longer with the team. They used him a lot for 2 years. Jacob Barnes last year, I think they used him a lot early, and he paid a little bit of a price. But baseball has become a bullpen game now, JR. And you know, I think through five games, the bullpen had pitched as many innings as the rotation. Look at the way the managers ran the World Series last year, the Dodgers and Astros. A guy would not even go five innings. You know,
yeah.
You have to throw five to even qualify for a victory. So if they're taking you out before you've thrown five, you can't even get a win.
Right.
You know, the rules don't allow it. But it's a bullpen game now. That thing you mentioned about multi-innings, that's huge. Because if you get a couple of innings out of one guy, then you might not be able to pitch him the next night, but you'll pitch somebody else two innings who didn't
For
pitch.
Sure, yeah. That's what we've seen.
You know, the Cardinals didn't even see Corey Knebel and Josh Hader.
Sure enough.
And they're probably, talent-wise, the two best pitchers in the bullpen, right?
Right.
So, you know, Knebel didn't pitch because closers only come in with leads. And the game they won, they came from behind in the ninth on home runs. Hader, just whatever, the matchups weren't there. Craig Counsell is, you know, he likes using his bullpen, but all managers like using their bullpen. And they started with seven relievers. You know, I always hate to sound like an old coot, but I'm an old coot, so I sound like an old coot a lot. But seven used to be a huge bullpen.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when the Brewers are in the American League, because you have the DH, you don't have to pull your pitcher. They would go with five or six guy bullpen. But now seven's like small. The Brewers want to go to eight. I don't know what they'll do to do it, because Woodruff is going to come out of the bullpen and start Friday, whether a position player like Aguilar is going to be sent away or what. But they consider eight-man standard procedure. And think about that. That's a lot of relievers. And it leaves you with a four-man bench. But they'd rather have the relief pitchers.
Right.
You know, oddly enough, we started early this year because they incorporated more off days into the season, but we don't have a lot of off days in April. I think two.
Yeah.
And so they've had to use their pitching a lot. And they're in a stretch now where they play several days in a row and against good competition too. You know, Cardinals, Cubs, then Cardinals again. Then they're going to take a break and go play the Mets. They're off to a great start and they have great pitching.
Yeah.
So their schedule's not easy. And he's going to use his bullpen a lot. And it's just, if you don't like it, stop watching baseball because this is the way the game's played now.
I think
Charlie Morton pitched 4 innings in relief in Game 7 last year. And that's what won the game.
They were amazing innings. Yep, they were very good. So you alluded briefly to Braun's game-winning home run. Unbelievably, in the first 5 games of the season, a guy hits a home run with down to the last out twice. It happened in San Diego. They were down to their final out. He hits a 3-run homer to give the Brewers the lead in a game they win. And then, of course, the walk-off homer on Tuesday night, right after Christian Yelich had hit a home run. I think clutch is always a little bit of a myth. We hear a lot about who's clutch and whether or not there are stats that can actually prove that or whatnot. But I guess if you look at this roster, I mean, we think Ryan Braun has maybe had a little attrition, and he isn't seen as maybe one of the 100 best players in baseball anymore. But I don't know, for my money, if the game's on the line, that's kind of the guy I want up there. Whether or not clutch is a thing, how do you feel about Ryan Braun when he comes into those situations?
Well, clutch is very highly debated, JR, and that's because 1 year a guy will bat 380 with runners in scoring position.
Right.
Next year will bat 180.
Yep. So
we're not talking about the Mike Trouts and the Bryce Harvers. We're talking about just everybody else, the general population of hitting.
As general population as you can be if you're a big league baseball player.
Exactly. Yeah, these guys are the elite of the elite. So general population among major league players. Yeah, it kind of comes and goes. Very few guys. Like last year, Ryan Braun had a rough year with runners in scoring position. Well, is he no longer a good hitter? He's already won 2 games with home runs this year. So that does kind of come and go. The one thing I will say that's kind of funny about those Braun home runs is both times he was off the next day.
Yeah.
And this was pre-planned. You know, council tells them, hey, you're playing tonight, but you're not going to play tomorrow. Because he's, you know, that's back to that 3-2 we talked about, 3 guys for 2 spots.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked Craig Council, I said, so you've told Braun twice he's not playing the next day and he wins games with home runs at night. Looks to me like you got to tell him that about 60 more times.
Right.
You know, and he'll win 60 games with home runs before you give him a day off. He goes, oh, I'll settle for 30.
Yes. Yeah, and that's not unusual to Braun. I've heard that before from visiting managers, too. They tell the guy they have a day off. Seems like more often than not those guys have a good day the day before because they know that they got some rest coming.
And, well, he is not swinging the bat great coming out of the
shoot either.
So it's not like he has 2 home runs and 10 other hits. I think he has 2 home runs and maybe 1 or 2other hits.
I know.
But if you're going to win games with home runs, and let's talk about coming from behind in the 9th inning, JR. Did you see the stat of what the Brewers were when trailing after 8?
I know they had
year?
1 win all of last year. I think 57 losses.
Right. 1-57. So they missed the playoffs by 1 game.
Right.
Suppose they would have won 1 or 2 more at the end. They'd
For
make
sure.
the playoffs.
They'd be in
right?
the playoffs.
But I will tell you, 1's low, but 5's probably high. 5 or 6. But people think teams come from behind all the time in the 9th inning. They do not.
Right.
And so to already see it twice is pretty amazing. And, from 3 runs down in San Diego, they scored 5. Just 1 run down against the Cardinals, they came back with back-to-back homers. So if this is your first year you've watched Major League Baseball or the Brewers or both, and you've already convinced yourself, man, we're going to see a whole bunch of 9th inning comebacks this year. No, you're not. I don't think you're going to. But pretty amazing we've had 2 already.
There's the so get into some quick hitters here. I wrote at jsonline.com some of the more intriguing walk-offs in the past 10 years at Miller Park. The one, Tuesday night was pretty great, back-to-back home runs, and the first game in Major League history that started with back-to-back home runs and ended with back-to-back blasts. So what are some that you remember? It doesn't have to be from the last 10 years. There's the obvious. There's the walk-off in Game 5 of the National League Division Series in 2011. There's the 2008 finale that got them into the playoffs or the wild card berth. There's Easter Sunday that everyone remembers with team streak. What are a couple that you really – I mean, you've been covering this team for so long. What are a couple you really remember?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that. Easter Sunday want to live in Brewer lore forever because it was part of a 13-0 run. It was
right.
So – and I don't know if we'll ever witness 2 weeks of baseball like we did at the start of the year, because Juan Nieves threw what is still the only no-hitter in Brewers
It's incredible,
history.
Isn't it? It's still the only one.
I know. Well, CC Sabathia threw one in Pittsburgh a few years ago, but the official scorer didn't recognize it.
Right.
So,
as we all feel in Milwaukee. No one else is remembering
it, but we
do. I know
that sounds like a homer, but I covered the game, and I told the guy right away, I says, you missed that call. This was like in the fourth or fifth inning. I said, looks like Sabathia's got pretty good stuff today. You may rue that later.
Yep.
And he went, looked at it, came back and said, nope, stand by my call. So he blew it twice. And so we still just have the one though here. But I digress. So, well, the one that kind of sticks out just because I don't think we'll ever see the celebration again is Prince Fielder's bowling ball
home
run. That
was great, wasn't
the
it?
Giants. For those who don't remember that, I want to say it was like,
2009.
Okay, thanks. I was going to say 3 or 4 years ago. Thank God you saved me because time just blows
I know.
By as
I hear
you get
you.
Older.
I hear you.
So what had happened was the Brewers decided that this wasn't Prince Fielder-centric. It was going to be the next guy.
Okay.
The next guy that hit a walk-off home run, and they're not very often. Do you realize that walk-off Braun had was the first one he had since 08? That one against Pittsburgh the last
the Grand
week
Slam,
of the
yeah.
season that helped them get to the playoffs. So, but they had decided the next guy, they were going to do the bowling ball celebration, right? And I will tell you, the current manager who was on that team was not keen on this idea.
He's also the last guy to fall. He is not well coordinated with everyone
like
else.
We were going to get the 7-10 split for a minute.
This
council was a reluctant tumbler. But anyway, they had decided it was the next guy, and it happened to be Prince, which was pretty good because he got to the plate, threw his arms up in the air, and boom, down go the pins. Well, the Giants didn't like that too much.
Nope. Bruce Bochy, not a fan.
Yeah,
not a fan.
But last game they played that season, so they sat and sat and sat on it all year. And the next year when they came back, Barry Zito, first game of spring training, drills Prince right in the butt. They knew it was coming. Zito had to make a statement as a veteran guy. Prince just went to, he kind of said, okay, really, if you got, and Zito didn't throw hard, so it didn't hurt much, but he just took first base.
Right.
So that was a memorable one just because the bowling ball celebration, and I think they were encouraged to tamp down the celebrations a little bit after.
Yeah.
Although after Braun's the other night, he became an orange
Turned
man.
Pink.
He was like Marlins man dressed in orange because they poured Gatorade on him and dyed his uniform orange.
Yes. Todd Rosiak joining us now. Todd, we're talking about memorable walk-offs, and it doesn't have to be in the last 10 years, but what sticks out for you? What's the one that you really remember?
I will just go with the Tony Plush and the NLDS.
Yes.
I mean, that was my first year on the beat. Game 5, Miller Park, all the marbles on the line, whatever cliches you want to use. Steps up there and tickles it through, as he said. J.J. Putes just barely missed a kick save, which would have made it an interesting play. But seeing Carlos Gomez on second, roaring around third, you knew he was going to score. It was just a culmination of a really a great game, what turned out to be a really good series, and a great season at that point for the Brewers. And I'll always remember the post game. Just how crazy it was, and we were in the clubhouse obviously for the celebration after they clinched the division, but this was kind of different level stuff, and seeing Nigel Morgan in the clubhouse with that SWAT helmet.
Yes.
And he'd done all the interviews and everything, and he came in and you could tell he was just emotionally spent. He just was sitting on the floor next to his locker talking to the few of us that remained. It was really kind of raw and emotional, and that was like, I mean, think about it, the biggest moment ever probably of his life.
For sure,
It's a hit that will, if it's one of the top three moments in franchise history, I would argue.
Oh, completely.
With what was on the line and everything. So we saw him in spring training a couple years ago when he was with the Indians, and we were chatting with him, and we were joking around about how he'll always have a place in Milwaukee, 40 years from now, they can roll him in a wheelchair.
You're totally
and
right.
And he'll be welcomed with open arms because of what he did and what he meant to the team that year.
And two interesting things about that, he wasn't on the team till the last day of spring training.
Right.
They traded for him on the last day of spring training. So he ends up getting one of the biggest hits in Brewers history. And it's why we don't get excited about opening day rosters. They got Dan Jennings after opening day this year. The other thing is, Todd and I got to see the agility of owner Mark Attanasio that day, because as Todd said, once it rolled through, Carlos Gomez, unless he trips and breaks both legs, he's going to score. So Attanasio jumped over the railing, and he was one of the first guys to greet him. I'm pretty sure there was some type of infraction, owner infraction there. But he was one of the first guys to grab Carlos Gomez after he got back up. And the other guys were like running out to get Niger, right? So Attanasio got got a big hug from Gomez. And so now we have protective netting
to block Attanasio.
So I said, I asked Mark this spring, I says, what are you going to do now if there's a big hit? And I think he might have a pair of scissors and just cut his way through.
Todd, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were covering the game when Yelich and Ryan Braun went back to back. Give us a sense of what the aftermath was there. I mean, Ryan Braun got doused in Gatorade, like Tom said, and had a pink uniform by the end of the night. But I'm sure that plays into the things we've talked about, the camaraderie on this team and the way that this team sort of picks each other up.
Well, you know what? I saw the aftermath, nothing, because I was staring at my computer screen,
your whole
deleting
story.
The first six paragraphs of my story and rewriting it. I mean, that's literally what our job becomes at that point. But, you know, I mean, I look up a little bit, you know, and you see what's going on. You see the replays after, and it was obviously a very exciting moment for the team. It was a heck of a way to finish a game, you know, going back-to-back like that, and then to be able to witness history with the two leadoff homers.
So what's your favorite wrestler's name? What Hardy? Is it Matt?
Yeah, no. Matt Hardy.
Yeah, so you did his
delete. Yes, it was. I was talking like Matt Hardy after the game when I had filed because my brain was that fried with everything that had happened. But
you know, JR, people don't realize what happens to us as writers when a game flips like that, because we literally have to blow out. You can't write two game stories and, you know, prepare for two different outcomes.
Right. Well, especially because you can't imagine.
I'm watching at home, and that from the sports writer's centric viewpoint, I say to myself, Todd's scrambling right now.
It's fun for everybody but the writers who are all locked in. And you can see that in the press box. When a game like that happens, if you want to look up at the press box, everybody is hard at work looking at their computer because everything just changed.
St. Louis's Rick Hummel was flipping it the other way. He had a victory story into a loss story.
Yeah, so at least, I mean, from that vantage point, at least I had something more fun to write about and more willing participants to talk to. You know, I can imagine the Cardinals clubhouse was not the most enjoyable in that situation, whereas, you know, all the culpable parties for the Brewers were front and present and accounted for and had some really good stuff to say. So, you know, it's a scramble at the end, but those are also the really fun games to be able to you know, kind of take in from the sideline or the press box.
That's where JS Online comes in handy, because you scramble and hopefully get a gamer in the paper, but then we get to come back online with an analysis, and Todd got to, you know, really capture the flavor, talk to Braun and all of that. And so, you know, a little plug for JS Online too. Don't ever forget to come, you know, that we come back with analyses after these games, and it gives us time to catch our breath, let them catch their breath, and see what they have to say about this stuff.
And you had a column on JS Online a few days ago about the Cardinals always spoiling the fun for the Milwaukee Brewers, the home opener, the most recent example, although they got a little bit of atonement there the next day with those walk-off home runs. Now we begin a four-game series with the Chicago Cubs, and you hear it every time the Cubs come to Miller Park that Chicago fans have taken over and Milwaukee fans bemoan this, even though many of them are selling their season tickets to make it happen. I don't know how you guys feel about it. I mean, there's certainly the perspective of, hey, they're making money for the product in Milwaukee, so why worry about it? And then there's obviously the home field turns into a visiting park angle as well. How do you guys feel about it? You hear this from fans, from players, every single time this happens. Where do you guys fall on this?
Who cares? It doesn't bother us. I mean, we're here regardless. I don't care who's cheering. I don't care who's booing. It's just don't mess with my view. That's all I really care about. Don't mess with my view of the game. I mean, I can see where Brewer fans get you know, a little PO'd about it. I'm going to be interested to see, you know, with the way the Brewers did the ticket purchase plan this offseason, if that tilts it any more away from the Cubs, because it's traditionally here the last couple of years, it's been kind of, what, 80-20 Cubs probably, maybe more than that.
Especially late in the season, you know, when the Cubs are
barely in the pennant race.
So I agree with Todd. This is going to be the best litmus test, because if Brewers fans bought tickets, and let's face it, you can be a Cubs fan, and for those who don't know the ticket plan, you had to live in the state of Wisconsin, you got first dibs on Cubs tickets, right? Well, there's Cubs fans in Kenosha, Racine, and down at the border. So that didn't just totally block out Cubs fans. But if as excited as we heard Brewers fans were about this season, if they went ahead and flipped their tickets to make money anyway in the first series at Miller Park, and if this is a Cubs, then forget it. It's never going to change. If the Brewers don't at least have as many fans as the Cubs do in this open series, then it will never, ever change, because the excitement level should be pretty good for the home fans, right?
Right. Definitely agree with that. Gentlemen, I appreciate you joining me again. Tom Hodricourt, Todd Rosiak. Find all their coverage at jsonline.com. Before the game, after the game, notes are before the game, analysis after, lots of great content. And you want to say one more thing, Todd?
Yeah, I was just going to throw in a plug. I believe my my Q&A series will be starting this next week. And had a very long, fruitful, and interesting conversation today with Jimmy Nelson. So told me a lot of interesting things, a lot of stuff that I had never heard before, and I don't know if anybody's heard.
Cool.
So be on the lookout for that. I believe that'll be running next Tuesday.
All right, excellent. I'm curious to know. A lot of people keeping an eye on Jimmy, and when he comes back, that certainly would be a boost to the starting rotation. Thanks to Todd and Tom. We'll catch you again real soon.
Thanks to those guys for joining me. Now we'll get to the interview with Josh Hader, Brewers reliever, popular Brewers reliever. He's a Maryland native. He's got the long hair. Up until this year, he had the goggles, but he has done away with those for this season. Disappointingly, for those who like the sort of Kurt Rambis look. But still, chatted with him about a whole bunch of topics. I apologize, the audio not great. Josh sounds great. My audio not so great. So forgive me for that. Still learning a little bit about the best settings, the best way to get through the kinks. So forgive that as we were doing this interview at Miller Park on Thursday before the game. But give a listen. Here's Josh Hader. My guest is Josh Hader, left-handed reliever for the Milwaukee Brewers. This is his second year now with the team. Kind of nice to not be a rookie anymore, I suppose, huh?
I guess you can still consider a rookie.
Yeah.
Like a rookie is,
yeah, you
a
didn't qualify,
year.
Right?
I haven't got a full year.
For sure.
Yet, so still a rookie, still learning.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit about growing up in Maryland. My understanding is you're kind of in a triangle sort of between Annapolis, Maryland, Baltimore, Washington, D.C. Was it a small town? Give me a sense of what your upbringing was like.
No, I mean, I would say it's... fairly, it wasn't too much of a small town. I mean, there's a bunch of little cities around us, so a lot of people went to my high school, so yeah, I guess you could say it was a pretty decent sized
Sure.
city.
Okay. When Baltimore drafted you, did you consider them your hometown team, or were you a Baltimore, an Orioles fan growing up?
So I actually went to a lot of Orioles games growing up. You know, we had Little League days where we walked around the outfield for a game, and you know, had that big league experience, I guess you could say. And,
right.
You know, it was exciting when they drafted me. Actually, funny thing is, we had in high school senior All-Star game.
I heard about that.
And I was actually driving to the conference, and that's when I got drafted. I was on my way there. And they,
So you were almost actually at the Orioles Stadium when the Orioles took you.
Yep.
Crazy. So you're, and that's the 19th round, if I recall, and. Was there some sort of, I think there was like a velocity jump for you at some point, right? After either your first year in the organization or shortly after you got drafted. So what changed for you?
You know, I really think it was just a workout regimen. You know, being able to, throw every day and also, you know, actually getting a good weightlifting program.
Yeah.
And also just maturing, just growing into my body. You know, I wasn't too big of a guy coming out of high school, and, you know, I kind of, changed a little bit in my mechanics, and that also helped me with rhythm through my motion.
Yeah. So when you were traded to Houston, well, having been traded to Houston in the first place and then getting traded again, was it easier the second time around getting dealt to Milwaukee, that you'd gone through it once before, you'd changed personnel, coaches before? Did that make the second time around a little easier?
For sure. But also, you know, when I got traded over to Houston, you know, the guys that they had in the minor league organization, it was very easy to, transfer. You know, those guys were, they helped me out. They, made me feel comfortable, and, they didn't make me feel like the new guy. So,
right.
that was very easy transition for me. But, yeah, when the second time I got traded, I had an idea of, how to go about things, and also, really what to look for. You know, you don't change anything in your game, but you know, it's just also, it's a different atmosphere and, you know, new things. It's always a little uncomfortable, but, you know, like I said, both teams, you know, the minor leagues, they made it very comfortable for me to make that transition.
Yeah. You got to work with Rick Peterson. He used to coach with the Brewers a few years ago. My understanding is he's kind of an experience. Is that, like, what did you get from Rick? Did you spend a lot of time with him? Or?
Yeah, I mean, for the time I was there, I wasn't there too long.
Right,
but,
sure.
He helped me develop a changeup, and also he's one of the guys that changed up my delivery where, you know, I was more in that rhythm and I had my legs and my upper half flowing together.
Sure.
And they were in sync. So definitely he's the one that kind of, you know, helped me figure out my mechanics.
Cool. I'm sure at the time you weren't thinking of yourself at all as a relief pitcher. That's sort of a recent revelation. But at the time, did you consider that that would maybe be an option for you someday? I mean, you were pretty much a starter all the way through the minors. So was there, if you had looked back at that when you were first starting out, would you have sort of bristled at the idea of becoming a reliever someday? Or were you just about whatever, you know, wherever they were going to use you?
Well, fun fact is when I got drafted by the Orioles that year, 2012, I went to GCL in short season A-ball, and yeah. I actually was in the bullpen. I wasn't a starter. So I actually had a little bit of taste of that reliever role. And I like it, you know, coming out. It wasn't as pressured situations as it is now, but, you know, still sitting in the pen, getting that, you know, late game feel. But, yeah, I love it. It's something new now. You know, obviously it was a short term early and then being a starter, but it was something nice.
And the role of a reliever has changed so much, even in the last 5 years. You know, I'm sure as a lefty, you could have been pigeonholed as a lefty out guy 5 years ago, and that's not happening now. Have you paid attention to sort of, I mean, you know, the Andrew Miller phenomenon, is that something you noticed at the time that you were really seeing the game of relief pitching changing, moving to more, you know, multi-inning roles, things like that?
You know, it's definitely changed a lot recently. You know, the way Andrew Miller did in the playoffs, you know. Yeah, it's something that you look forward to as a reliever. You know, coming in now, you know, being able to do multiple situations, and you just want to be, you know, an asset for yourself where you can do, you know, you can come in different roles and you can be valuable in different roles, and that's the biggest thing. Is if you can be a versatile and, you know, get the best use as yourself, that's the way you want.
I believe you were part of a combined no-hitter in the minor leagues. I don't know if that resonates as kind of the top highlight of your minor league career before you got to the majors. Anything else jump to mind? Anything else that happened to you along the way?
You know, actually, the funny thing is Davinsky's with Houston now.
Yeah, yeah.
We actually had a combined no-hitter. He had dealt through five, and then I came in for, I think it was one out. And we got canceled by the rain.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
So you get to stamp your name for one out rain shortened game.
So really, it was his no-hitter, and I was able to throw one out.
But, I'm sure you talked to him about that, though. I'm sure that.
So that's an awesome experience. You know, just seeing, making these memories throughout and with different guys, making friendships. And that's really what it is about. And baseball, you know a lot of people, and you get to know a lot of people. We're a big family, and that's what's great about it.
Why the number that you have? Is that just what you were assigned right away, or is there something significant about 71?
I'm big number on 17. And obviously, Gant has that one. I thought, why not switch it up, do 71? And
sure.
Kind of stuck with me.
Jacob DeGrom cut his hair. I don't know if you saw that, but that's one less reliever or pitcher noted for his hair. Do you feel there is ever a scenario? He feels it helps him throw the ball harder. Is there ever a scenario where you would cut what you got going on now?
No, I don't think, at least not right now. I haven't planned on cutting it at all. I mean, obviously the glasses were a different change.
Yep.
But no, hair's here to stay.
Yeah, so what was it about the goggles? They were putting too much pressure on your head, I think I read?
Yeah, you know, just going through the hat and really putting pressure and dealing with those after every pitch. It's something that you don't have to worry about now. So contacts, still getting used to them, but definitely like the feel of them.
I think it was about 80% fastballs for you last year. If somebody were to say you're a fastball pitcher, are you comfortable with that? Is that, you know, do you want to see more? I'm assuming you always want to see more refinement in your breaking pitches, but what does it mean to you to be a fastball guy? Is that how you want to be known?
Yeah, I mean, that's my strength. That's, you know, since I've been growing up, that's the biggest pitch that I've learned. You know, I've learned that if you can control your fastball and you can command your fastball, you know, that's what's going to get you through. And then the secondary is what's going to keep them off balance of that. So for me, you know, being able to use my fastball as much as I can, but also, you know, keeping them off the fastball, because obviously, you know, these guys are great hitters, and you know, when they know one pitch is coming, no matter where it's at, they can hit it. So the biggest thing is, you know, keeping them off balance, and the biggest thing this year is keeping my off speeds consistent and being able to, you know, make that fastball a little bit much better and look faster and harder.
All right, that's it. Josh Hader, thanks so much.
I appreciate it.
Thanks again for tuning into the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We intend to come at you every homestand before the start of every homestand that the Milwaukee Brewers will have in 2018. So we'll take a little bit of a break here. We'll be back with you. I believe April 16th is the day when the Brewers return to town to face the Cincinnati Reds and then the Miami Marlins. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll catch you again soon.